In this episode of She Talks Tech, I'm joined by Orla Dunn, Head of Foundational Infrastructure and Core Engineering at Goldman Sachs. Orla shares her career story from engineer to senior leader. She also talks about her role as sponsor of the Women's Engineering Network and the multiple programs Goldman Sachs has in place to develop their female tech talent. Orla also shares her passion to mentor and sponsor others and explains how she believes that as a leader, it's her job to pay it forward and to nurture future generations of women in tech.
So obviously, Orla, I know you, but let's tell the audience watching a little bit about your background. Where did you grow up? School, education?
Yeah, so I was born and bred in Dublin, Ireland, and I had a very traditional kind of upbringing there. I will share one data point that might be interesting. So there's another female partner in engineering at Goldman's, and we coincidentally happen to go to the same primary and secondary school. So for statisticians amongst us, I think that's quite an outlier. But anyway, and I happened to meet her at a program years ago in New York, and we're very, very, very good friends now. But that's just a little data point. So look, you know, I grew up in an Ireland that, you know, wasn't terribly rich. And normally when you got your degree, you also got a passport. So I was somebody who left Ireland. And it's interesting how I accidentally completely landed in this industry. So I went to a graduate recruitment fair in Dublin. British Airways were there at the time offering, you know, you could get free flights. And I'm like, that's kind of sounds cool. Went around the corner, bank called Morgan Stanley, knew nothing about them. They were offering a higher base salary and they said, we'll train you in New York. I'm like, sign me up. So I think I was bought for £3,000. That was the delta at the time between British Airways and Morgan Stanley. So I ended up in this industry accidentally. I did a graduate training program in Morgan's, which was like 6 months kind of touring infrastructure, 3 months in a classroom being taught how to code. And then they decided where you were better placed. I went to software development. I spent several years there. And I always wanted to be attracted to, for some bizarre reason, I was always attracted to working in networks. So eventually I got to transition over to the networks and voice space. And my career continued on from then. So nothing special about my background, fairly humble background. As I say, kind of landed here accidentally, but absolutely no regrets many, many years after that career choice.
So you've seen, a bit like me, obviously, you know, been in the industry many years, you've seen that complete kind of evolution, if you like, of technology.
Yeah.
What's the bit that most kind of has excited you on that journey?
So I think what's really interesting, if you look back, like when I joined, we would introduce technology to people, right? You'd get like, you know, the new version of Windows or something. It's like, wow, this is really different. And you look at the journey we've been on now, where like they're like, why isn't everything Apple? Like, you know, we've completely gone 180 now. We're trying to keep up. It's been very interesting. And I think the other thing is, years ago, we would work with a small number of vendors and they were very established firms. You knew your relationship, you knew how to navigate. And I think what's interesting now is you spend a lot of time meeting really interesting like fintechs and startups. And a lot of the time you're like, who's going to be here in 2 years' time? So again, it's gone from a very much a certainty, well-known model to something that's less certain, very interesting, but certainly you need to keep investing in like who are the companies that you really can see adding value and making it through that initial startup phase. So as I say, the whole dynamics have just been really interesting. What I love as well is like we now have such a tech-aware generation. Right. Yeah. From getting on an airplane and seeing a young baby swiping a screen, right there, it's just there and it's intuitive. But I think what's great now is we bring in people who've grown up in such a tech aware generation. And what I think is great is they kind of keep pushing our boundaries, right? Which is great because I think that's how you make a sustainable organization. So I love welcoming in new talent because I think they're kind of fearless because it's what they've grown up in. It's not something they've learned at college. Yeah. And I think that's a really interesting dynamic, Vanessa.
And also, I think it's really interesting how corporates have adopted that innovation through startups. I mean, in previous years, it was legacy infrastructure, legacy systems. This is what we've always done. This is what we'll always do. We'll just keep putting, you know, plugging like holes with thumbs, you know. No, but now it's like, We want that innovation, don't we? We want that talent in to shake it up a bit.
Completely. And I think the other thing that's changed the dynamic is cloud. Cloud made it so much more accessible for you to start a company, right? Because you didn't need to make all of that local investment and building out infrastructure. You could like go on your pay-as-you-go model with the cloud. So I think it was a great leveler. And look at the pandemic, what the pandemic brought us, right? You know, I think the level of connectivity increased significantly through technology. I look at how very dated approaches to even simple processing like passport renewal has now gone completely digital. Like, it's been a great enabler. So every situation is an opportunity. And I think that's what we continue to advocate for and push for in the modern tech world.
Totally. So tell me a little bit about your role at the moment, what you're doing at Goldman Sachs.
So I have a few roles at the moment, but I'm still responsible globally for the infrastructure of the firm. So that's running a lot of our data centers, people buildings, network, storage, compute, middleware. We can take a different narrative around this. I can either think about myself as being, you know, the utility at the firm, whereas I can often say we can run the risk of being taken for granted until something breaks. And then it's like, why did you let that happen? It's a bit like your electricity, glass supplies, etc. But like how we like to pivot is we're very much enabling the business. And Vanessa, I think, you know, for me personally, I think that's what the business got to appreciate and understand during the pandemic. We pivoted really quickly to get 98% of our firm working from home. You know, we had never planned for this. BCP events were maybe at a city level. We'd never thought about it at a firm level, right? And I think for me personally and for the organization I lead, it was a phenomenal moment of recognition of actually what we do to make sure they can all do their jobs.
And that was, I mean, it was fascinating, you know, when kind of watching that, a number of the banks moving trading floors to being able to work from home, you know, whereas before, if you would have suggested that in a room, they would have carted you off to somewhere, you know, on your own.
Yeah.
Even thought of the regulation around that, you know, yeah, would have been absolutely crazy, yet you all did it. Mm-hmm. Right. And you managed to do it. And I think that's flipped the narrative and changed the landscape for how we work. And hopefully will attract more people to the industry because, you know, we're busting some stereotypes there, aren't we? And some myths
as
that technology, really.
It is. And look, but in my own view on this is I think we'll end up with a hybrid model. Like, I think the 5-day thing is probably a bit passe. I don't think we can in many ways sustain permanently working from home because, you know, from my own view is, you learn through osmosis when you're in the office. You don't actually realize you're learning when you're sitting, listening to people, engaging. And I don't think we ever want to compromise that level of connectivity and learning moments that we may or may not recognize. Personally, you know, I don't know about you, but like I have enjoyed coming back to the office because I feel like I bookend my day, I bookend my week. We're actually working from home without a lot of discipline. You know, work can be quite invasive into your home life.
I agree. Yeah. And also I agree for the youngsters that are coming in, right? Because they need that network. They need that contact, you know, and that's how we all learn, right? And you're right. Being around people, that innovation, the
apprenticeship culture that like you don't realize you're learning behaviors as well as technology from people around you. Absolutely.
100%. I definitely agree with you. The hybrid model, 100%. Mm-hmm. You're really passionate about equity, diversity, and inclusion. Yeah. Tell me, where did that stem from?
You know, look, I think we all have our own role models in life, but, you know, certainly my mother was mine. You know, she was a woman who in many ways broke the mold. She kind of had her own company, which, you know, was very unusual for her generation, particularly in Ireland. But she had very strong morals and beliefs in many ways. And I think, you know, that certainly the nurture nature piece, right, you know, that certainly would have been an influencer on me. But I can always remember, you know, wanting to ensure that everyone had a voice and that everyone got listened to. And I think that that was something that always drove me. And look, I'm going to be honest with you, Vanessa, it was when I look back, you know, youth is wasted on the young, you know, and many times, right? I remember when they started a women's network in Goldman, I was like, why are we doing that? Like, why do we need that? Like, why are we thinking we need something special? Like, you know, we can fight the good fight, if you know what I mean. And I remember I had a really, really good mentor who said to me, you are going to have to acknowledge that you're a role model and get comfortable with that. And the fact that you join this network will have those ripple effects that you probably don't even acknowledge or have awareness of. And I actually was always very appreciative. They were very wise words of, we don't often realize that we actually are role models. And to be me, you need to see me, right? You know, we've got to keep amplifying that message of the more women we can see in leadership positions, breaking that glass ceiling, we're actually carving that path for generations behind us.
You know, so it's so interesting that you say that. We've recently done a piece of research with Ipsos Mori on the barriers women face in tech. And one of the key points that come out there was access to role models and visibility of role models. And you're absolutely right. As regardless, I think, of how senior you are, it is, it's being, I love the term that you use, you know, if you can't see me, you can't be me. I think that's, yeah, incredible. Yeah.
You can reuse that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be everywhere now, but we're quite
good. Will I get any attribution?
Absolutely, 100%. So you're the sponsor of the EMEA Women in Engineering Network, aren't you? Tell me a little bit about that and kind of what's its overall goal? What problem are you trying to solve, or, you know, how what programs exist?
So again, you know, we're coming up to our 20th anniversary this year, which is incredible, right?
Yes.
But the reason, and actually it was a young graduate who came up with the idea, so I can't claim any accolades for that. And it was really about attracting, retaining, and developing women in the organization. And as I always say to people, it's hard to increase your number. It's harder to keep it there, and it's even harder to keep moving that needle. And it's something that needs ongoing focus. So we've created this network. We have many different pillars around recruiting, both at graduate level and lateral hiring. We focus on, you know, we've communications, we've working mothers, we've technical training, we've business training. We run an awful lot of like tech clinics as well. And because again, and it was an interesting insight. Years ago, I ran a program at Goldman's that I called Tech Track. Because what we were finding was, a lot of women were unintentionally leaving technical roles because there were working managers who were like, oh, you're such a good communicator and you're really organized. Taking those skill sets and actually unintentionally, as I say, they were moving away from more technical roles. And the whole ethos I had with this program was partnering with our tech fellows to make sure that women were making conscious career decisions. That may be a fine decision, but make sure it's a conscious one, rather than an unconscious one, that you drift away from being technical. And I remember one of the sound bites that I learned as part of that program, where somebody was saying, you know, a lot of the time, if there's a problem to be solved, men can get very kind of, you know, competitive in trying to solve that problem and unintentionally maybe isolate women as part of that conversation, because, you know, I don't think we'll naturally lean into that competition in the same way. And it was real. I was like, oh, my gosh, that's so interesting. I've probably witnessed that behavior, but actually never registered it. And it was a real learning moment for me. So, look, I think the value of the network is we can create opportunities for women to be making investment in their skills, to make conscious career decisions, and to make sure that they reach their full potential.
And again, I find that so interesting. That's such that they would be lured away from their technical role based on these additional skill sets that they're perceiving.
Which should be complementary rather than distracting. Yeah.
Absolutely. But what an observation, you know, and also an issue to address. So, I mean, you do so much at Goldman's. I mean, you support so many external organisations, not least mine. But you also do a number of kind of programmes internally, don't you? Leadership programmes, like focusing on female talent is a real big thing at Goldman's. Tell me a little bit about
that. Look, we want inclusion and diversity to be really part of the DNA at the firm. So we have inclusion and diversity committees in all of, like in the regions, and there's a global one. I'm fortunate I sit in the European Inclusion and Diversity Committee. And we are setting targets for different diversity populations at the firm because our clients are diverse, but we also understand there's a huge opportunity for, we can learn more from each other the more diverse we are. And we don't have like the mini-me syndrome and kind of the same thing of like, you know, an echo chamber, we've got to welcome diverse thoughts and approaches. You know, we had a great managing director promotion class last year. It was our most diverse ever, 30% women. And certainly in region, we were delighted to see five female engineers. We've something called, you know, for our aspiring vice presidents, we run a program called the Women's Career and Strategic Initiatives, where they get access to senior leadership and kind of make sure that they're, you know, kind of understanding ways that they can continue meeting their potential and seeing more of that acceleration of the career. You know, we in 2018 signed up to the UK Women in Finance Charter. And as I say, we want to make sure that women represent 30% of our senior talent by 2023. So I think it's clear to me that the firm is so committed. And then we try and ensure that we're super supportive of our women, recognizing you'll have different career journeys depending on life events. But we've got like backup childcare. We have a phenomenal nursery on site. And we have certain, you know, assistance with nanny searches, parental leave for both men and women. And we have pathways to parenthood, which actually can help healthcare provisioning for those who may have trouble trying to conceive. So we're trying to be very holistic and making sure we create that ecosystem of support, recognizing, as I say, appropriately, there'll be many life events that people will want to embrace, but make sure that they still have a career that they can commit to.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that, the fact that you can have your kids on site. You know, if I think back to my career, just the confidence I would feel of knowing that my kids were in the building, they were downstairs, I could just kind of get on with my day. So I love that. I absolutely love that. And I know you're making great strides in that area as well.
And, you know, and I refrain from going down and trying to recruit them. You know,
that's what I call starting the talent pipeline early. I often get accused of that. Are you going to hang outside of schools to get more girls into tech? And I'm like, I might do that.
But Vanessa, like, that is something we've got to address. If you look at the STEM numbers for females, like, that's my biggest concern. And I think we've got to address this threefold. Like, I think we need to reach girls at a younger age, educate them to how much they use technology already. And there's many different roles. Like, we need to blow away that stereotype of like, you're sitting in a corner coding. There's so many different roles. I got into technology because I love solving problems. And I think that's what we need to go out and say is, it's about solving problems, being logical, but there's a huge aspect of creativity in how you solve those problems. But I think we shouldn't make the mistake that it's just the children we need to reach. I think we need to reach parents and educate them better so that they don't unintentionally go, well, you really want a career in tech? Really? Like, we've got to make sure they understand the potential here. And then we need to be working with teachers and governments to make sure curricula are appropriate and that we have the right teachers passionate about this that are teaching those subjects. We all know, I certainly, maths was my favorite subject, but it probably had a huge amount to do with my teacher. They were just inspiring. And I think that's where we develop that love at a very young age. So that's something, like, it's a battle that has to be kind of fought on all fronts in many ways.
It absolutely. And the curriculum isn't necessarily fit for purpose. You know, I often tell the story of my daughter being the only girl in her tech class, and they were teaching her how to create websites on Dreamweaver, which is a technology that's like, you know, yonks old.
Yeah.
A skill she can take into the world. But I mean, there are lots of company, like not-for-profit organisations like Tech She Can, who are also at the conference, that are creating lesson plans around, you know, technology in aviation, technology in retail. So trying to kind of bring that to life. But there's also another piece of research that's actually on the conference that's been done by 3M that looks at the attitudes of parents to kids going
to hear.
Yeah. Because you're quite right, that's kind of where it begins.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to talk to you about, go back to kind of you know, some of the programs that you run and also your own career. One of the things that came up in our recent report was that ladies have lots of access to mentorship, and they've all said how important it is, but where it's lacking is sponsorship. Mm-hmm. So that's having senior individuals or other individuals advocating for them, you know, clearing their pathway, throwing their names into rooms where they're not. What do you think about sponsorship, and what does good look like from a senior perspective?
So, look, I think it's really, really important, right? Because I think we can fall into a path of trying to mentor people often into who they're not. And I think we need to be really careful and identify and lean into the unique aspects of individuals, right? Look, my own view is, I remember I was given a sponsor earlier in my career. I will always say to people, it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. They were somebody in the business. And I went to meet with them. And halfway through the conversation, they yawned. And I said, am I boring you? And they said, frankly, yeah, a bit. Great learning moment for me, because I was speaking tech speak. I was offering them no value. Like, they were getting nothing out of the conversation. So I'm very appreciative that they were that honest with me, because I took it away and actually said, I need to kind of think, how do I make it interesting to them and bring value to them? It, like, you know, so that it's a two-way conversation, because we'll actually drive a lot more of that. So I think for people in engineering, it can be very helpful to think about non-engineers and how we present ourselves to them is one aspect. But like, I've also had moments in my career where I probably didn't even realize it was a sponsorship moment, where leadership asked me to take roles that I was like, why would I want to do that? Like, really? And I took the role. And then, you know, I actually joined the dots a few months later of like, oh my gosh, you understood. I was very proficient in these aspects of my role. I needed to demonstrate different aspects. It was very uncomfortable. It was a learning moment. And I rang them and said, I disliked you intensely for about 3 months. I'm now thanking you because you were actually investing in me and rounding me out. But at the time, I didn't realize it. So I think there's two ways for this, Vanessa. I think you need to make sure that you recognize when there is a sponsorship moment maybe happening in your career, and kind of trust your own leadership. And then there's more formal programs. But I think, you know, we all, unfortunately, until we get to that 50-50 representation, I think we're going to need to continue investing to make sure people don't derail a little and that they actually reach their potential and we continue investing in them.
And you make a really valid point there around being uncomfortable, right? Because there's times in your career where you are uncomfortable or you're questioning, perhaps your own imposter syndrome creeps in. Mm-hmm. Can I do this? You know, and that's difficult, isn't it? When your own inner critic is telling you can't.
It is. And is that a gender issue? Like, you know, how many other people have that trigger, to your point, that could be the questioning trigger rather than actually, of course I can do it. And what I don't know and what I don't learn, I can apply myself to. Like, I think we have a natural reservation of, if we're not 100%, we're not ready. Yeah. We all need to get comfortable, go at 80. And as I always say to people, I make decisions based on the information I have at the time. New information comes in, you remake your decision. Like, you've got to kind of learn and get comfortable. But I think we hold too high a bar for ourselves of like, if it's not 100%, it's not going to be acceptable. Absolutely. I think we're the only people thinking that way.
It comes up so many times. It came up in the research. It comes up on workshops that we do all the time. So, you know, something that we kind of all need to address. So you heard it from Orla, right? 80% is good enough. That's it. We're going to go for it. So they're doing things outside the tech space, like outside of your role.
Yeah.
Is really important, right? Because sometimes it can fill those gaps that you talk about.
Look, I think, first of all, there's an element of like, it's very humbling. We do something called community teamworks here, where we go out into schools and we work with children, you know, around coding programs. But I think they're great moments for us, like, to learn. But I think the other thing is, as engineers, we kind of love giving back. We love sharing the skills we have. We love teaching. We love seeing people investing. And I just think it's natural that we also want to make sure this is a sustainable pipeline in the future. And as I say, back to like, children are like sponges. So it's a great moment when you can go out and work with them and actually see their reaction when they problem solve. Like, that is one of the most beautiful moments, right? Of like, they've achieved something because they've solved a problem, right? And you just keep need to build and build on that. Back to problem solving and making that incremental is what we're all about, right? But we certainly love giving back. And, you know, they're one of my favorite moments of when we get out and work in the community and actually see those magic moments happen.
Absolutely. And again, I think it's important that all of us, regardless of where you are in your career, whether you're a junior member or senior member, that we kind of give back in some way, because that's how we inspire the next generation. So it's time to pass the baton, Orla, right? What is the one piece of career advice that you would like to pass on to the individuals watching? So, you know, whether it's a mantra, life lesson,
I think one of the earliest pieces of advice I ever got was to be successful, have a successor. And I think it's really important that if you want opportunity, you have to create an environment and a situation where there's somebody who may not be ready today, but has that potential to step into your shoes. If not, you may find yourself anchored and you will miss those moments to take on other opportunities and to kind of learn different skill sets. So that was one thing said to me earlier in my career. It's always resonated with me. I'm very comfortable hiring people smarter than me so that I make sure that I can continue moving, as can the organization behind me. But I think we've got to get really comfortable with always make sure you've got someone lined up to step into your shoes so that you can actually look at new shoes.
Absolutely, 100% sound advice. So what's next for Orla?
Can I say a big holiday? I think, look, for everybody, I think, you know, we've had tough years with the pandemic. I think, you know, the situation in Europe right now is very sad on all fronts. There's hurt everywhere. But like Vanessa, the one thing I want to do, like longer term, my legacy here is all about the generation of female leaders that I leave behind. Like, that is what I would really like my legacy to be at Goldman's.
Amazing. Orla, I can't believe anyone would ever have a conversation with you and yawn. That's been incredible. You're one of the most humblest, down-to-earth women, you know, that I've interviewed. It's absolutely, and there's so many nuggets of advice in there. So, you know, long may you reign and build that legacy. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Vanessa.
You guys can find out more about Orla. She's on LinkedIn, so you can go and read her history there. But thank you so much for joining us.
No, thank you very much. Great time, great conversation, and great to spend time with you, Vanessa.
Thank you so much, Orla, for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Orla, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe and rate our podcast and give it that all-important 5-star review. And keep listening every Wednesday morning for a new episode of She Talks Tech from We Are Tech Women.